discussing the tzaddik, the Rebbe Abunov from Peshischa, Rebbe Simcha Abunov from Peshischa, we really were only able to have sort of a hakdam, an introduction, and we haven't yet started talking about his life. I did mention that is definitely unusual. The background in general is unique. As far as Hasidic masters are concerned, he had probably the most unusual of all backgrounds of the early Talmidim of the Talmidei Baal Shem Tov, definitely the most unusual background, and we'll talk more about that. And it only once we understand, when we understand his background, we'll be able to appreciate what he was able to accomplish. And in many ways, we see this even in our times, that there are some individuals who grew up in environments that were completely irreligious, non-religious, and went through certain experiences, later on to become observant Jews that learned Torah, and were able to make use of their experiences of the past in order to bring many, many Jews back to Hashem. Their understanding of people is different. If you grow up in a frum community, in the yeshivas and so on, then your understanding sometimes of people that are not from that background can be limited. Of course, Rabbi Abunim grew up in a very religious home. We'll talk about it, but it was certainly non-Hasidic. And the fact that he was able to grow up, and there were other tzaddikim that came from misnagdisha backgrounds, but this is not a typical misnagdisha background, as we'll see in a minute. And because of that, the Rebbe Abunim had an unbelievable understanding of people. Besides the fact that he himself did not for quite a few years become a rebbe, and we'll talk about what he was doing until that time. You raised your hand?
No.
Oh, okay. So let's just go through some of the facts, and we'll talk a little bit about the home in which he was raised, which is a very, very scholarly home and a very unusual home. The Rebbe Abunim's last name is actually Bonhart, but he's not referred to that by anybody, certainly not by the Chassidim. He's called the Rebbe Abunim, and it seems that he was born in the year 1766. Give or take a year, it's not 100% clear. As you know, that in those days, not all the records were carefully kept. But it seems that in the year, approximately Tavkuf Chavav, 1766, he was born in Poland, which itself was somewhat of an unusual episode in his family's history. His family was not Polish. His family was German. And his father was a tremendous Talmud Chacham, a tremendous tzaddik, who was not Hasidic, by the name of Reb Tzvi Hirsch, who's called the Vladislav Magid, who was a famous person in his own right, the Magid of Vladislav, the author of some very famous farm, Eretz Tzvi, and Va'asar Lameya, two famous farm, Eretz Tzvi and Asar Lameya, that are drushes, not Hasidic. There are indications that he was familiar in his later years with some Hasidic and Kabbalistic teachings, but basically the Svarim are drush. In his day, he was considered to be one of the greatest Magidim in all of Europe. Now you know that the Magidim were Jews, were tzaddikim, that even though they worked out of a certain home base where they lived and they davened, they were not the Rav of any shul, nor did they hold a position of Rosh Hashiva. They would actually travel from town to town, and that was their panosa. They would go to a certain town, and if it was someone who was known, if it wasn't known, then they would sort of test the person in one of the smaller shuls, and if it was somebody of substance, then he would have an opportunity to speak in the larger shuls of that community, and would be paid even by private individuals and sponsoring his magidas, his talks. Is that Esther? How you doing? This was the parnasa that the Vladislav Magid made also. So even though he was not a Polish Jew, there are interesting things in his life and the background that led to his being in Poland. His father never felt comfortable in Poland. He definitely had, as many of the German Jews had when they went into the more Eastern European countries, he definitely had a certain, I don't want to say negative attitude, he was a big tzaddik, but there was something there in how he viewed Polish Jewry in general was not in the most favorable way, like is in the Alte Heim in Germany. He actually passed away in Krakow before the Rebbe Abunim became a Hasidic Rebbe. He never actually got to see that. He didn't see that parsha in his son's life. It's hard to know whether that was for better or for worse, but he never saw it. The mother was also a person of very important and distinguished lineage. The mother was, her name was Rachel, and her father was Rabbi Betzalel Halevi Zhalakover. Rabbi Betzalel Halevi was the author of a sefer B'Shem Betzalel, also a tremendous scholar, non-Polish, also German-Austrian, not Polish. Father of Reb Tzvi Hirsch, the Vladislav Magid, he was called the Vladislav Magid, as I said, because it happened that for financial reasons, it was kedai for him to be in Poland, and since in Poland there were many, many more Jewish communities. In Germany, you had large, but few, Jewish centers. In Poland, every single shtetl, every single village, you had all over the place. So for him, it was kedai. It was just financially prudent and wise to be in Poland, but he never really wanted to be there. But he was called the Vladislav Magid because that was his home base. Most of his drushes, now this again is very unusual, most of his drushes he gave in German, not in Yiddish. This was going to cause the Rebbe Bunim aggravation later on, because the Rebbe Bunim was labeled as being a Deitcher, as being modern, because of his background, because the Germans in Poland, the German Jews were always suspect of being of lacking in Yiras Elokim, of not being God-fearing, which of course in many cases was true because of what was taking place at that time in history. But with the Haredi, with the Orthodox Jews, it was certainly not true. Rabbi Shlomo Shavarch was a very fine Jew, and we would wish him on any of our children should go in his way. And so was Rabbi Breuer, even though Rabbi Breuer was Hungarian. But he spent most of his life in Germany. So the Vladislav Magid actually spoke, he darshan most of the time in German, but at some point he was in Warsaw, he even went to Galicia, which was the complete opposite of his whole upbringing. And therefore, his way of dressing was by no means Polish Hasidic. His way of dressing was very Ashkenaz, which in those days meant that he did not wear the long clothing of the Jews of Poland. Even the non-Hasidic Jews of Poland went in very long clothing. Usually they'd almost reach the floor. That was the usual dress of the Jews of Poland. Whereas the German Jews wore like three-quarter coats that were more like similar to the kapotes that the Litvish or the Lubavitches wear nowadays, but they didn't wear the long garments that were the clothing of the Jews of Poland and Galicia and the Ukraine. So he was an Ashkenazi, and he kept them in Hagim. He kept them in Hagim of Ashkenaz. However, we can't say that the father, that Reb Tzvi Hirsch, was a misnagid. This is one of the advantages of the fact that he was from Germany, and part of being from a more cultured and enlightened school of Jewry, the hisnagdis, the opposition to Chassidus, really did not yet develop, hadn't really developed in Germany. There definitely was a sense that the Chassidim, that it's a different way of life, but there wasn't that hisnagdis that was among the Lithuanian Jews, who had a certain Messiah Neshit, of course, that was influenced by the Vilna Gaon. The German Jews were not really influenced by the Vilna Gaon or his students. They had their own way. So the hisnagdis, the opposition to Chassidus, was not strong. Therefore, we find that when the Rebbe Bunim, from the earliest age, the Rebbe Bunim was fascinated by Chassidim, and from an early age, he went to study by the Tzaddikim. We'll talk about who in a few minutes. But he went to the Tzaddikim, and we don't find anywhere in the recollections of the Rebbe Bunim that on any level that the father was trying to prevent him from going to the Chassidim. So even though it wasn't the father's way, by no means did the father oppose the Rebbe Bunim joining Chassidim. It wasn't his cup of tea, but he didn't get in the way of his son, which, as you know, the Tzaddikim that grew out of the Lithuanian communities, they suffered unbelievable isnagdus from their own families. To a large extent, there was terrible isnagdus from their own families, which is understood based upon what was going on in those days. At the end of his life, the Rebbe Bunim's father, Reb Tzvi Hirsch, the Vladislav Magid, at the end of his life, did in fact travel to the two Tzaddikim, to the Koznetzer Magid, and to the Chayzer from Lublin, and I'll tell you a couple of stories. We have, Baruch Hashem, a lot more stories when it comes to the Rebbe Bunim than most of the Hasidic rabbis, because it was already of the early Hasidic rabbis. There were more records that were kept, and the Rebbe Bunim himself was fond of telling over things about his past and his family. So we have some well-preserved traditions of that we have from the Rebbe Bunim himself about his family. So he did go at the end of his life to see the Kozhin Tzur Magid and the Chayzer from Lublin. And in fact, there is a very interesting story that I wanted to share with you about how the father, Reb Tzvi Hirsch, how he first actually came to the Chayzer from Lublin. How did he end up by the Chayzer from Lublin? Why did he go to the Chayzer? And this would have a tremendous impact upon the future of Reb Bunim's life and his own view of Chassidus. So let me just share with you the story of how did the Vladislav Magid, the father of the Rebbe Bunim, how did he end up at the Chayzer? That's a long way from Berlin to Lublin. Maybe not physically, but spiritually. And in the end of his life, we know that the Vladislav Magid had humbled himself completely to the tzaddikim of the generation. Completely. We could assume that he would have had unbelievable nachas seeing his son become a rabbi, but he never lived to see that. Now this is the story about how Reb Tzvi Hirsch, how the Vladislav Magid came to Chassidus. As we said, that the Vladislav Magid was known as a very, very great darshan, he couldn't make ends meet being in Vladislav, which is a pretty small town. He couldn't make a parnasa. And as a result of that, he went from town to town. One time, he was in the town of Lelev. Now, in Lelev, as Hashem would have it, he would meet, there was the famous tzaddik, Reb David Lelever. The famous tzaddik of David Lelever was a rebbe there in Lelev. And Reb David Lelever at that time was preparing for a trip, and we spoke about Reb David Lelever in the past. You might recall that by the Yid HaKadosh, we spoke about Reb David Lelever, that the Reb David Lelever was one of the great Mekarvim of the generation. He went from town to town, from city to city, bringing people back to Hashem. His chasodim, his kindness was beyond our understanding. So Reb David Lelever was preparing for one of his trips to go out into the world to bring Jews to Hashem. So the Rebbe Bunim's father, Vladislav Magid, so he said, by any chance on your trip, are you going to be passing through the town of Vladislav? So Rebbe David Lelever said, yes, I'm going by there. Is there something I can do for you? So he said, if you do me a taiva, if I could ask you a favor, I haven't been home for a few months, and my wife and children are by now probably starving, and I have 3 rubles. Can you imagine, Nabuch? Yeah, 3 rubles is what he was making for those months. I have 3 rubles. If you could please take these, if you're going already, if you could get them to my wife in Vladislav. And Reb David Lelever says, sure, my pleasure. So the maisa was that Reb David Lelever was going from town to town. Eventually, he came to Vladislav, but he arrived in Vladislav. It was after midnight. But he was worried. The Rebbe, Reb David was worried that they needed the money, and he wanted to make sure that they would have it immediately, that he would do his shlichus. He didn't give it to someone else to carry out. So Reb David Lelever went there to the, Reb David went to the house, whatever that shack of the Vladislav Magid, and the lights were out, and the doors, everything was shut. So he went to a window that was on the side, he banged on the door, and he was knocking on the door, and the Rebbe Bunim's sister, he had a sister, the Vladislav Magid's daughter, was unfortunately disabled. She was born with a terrible disability, and she never walked. She wasn't able to walk. So she heard somebody was making a tumult by the door, so she opened the window. I guess the mother didn't hear. She opened the window, and she called out, who is it? And Reb David Lelever came over to the window and said that your father, I'm sorry to wake you up, but your father had an urgent thing for me to take care of. Your father sent this money that I should give. Please give it to your mother, to the Rebbetzin. And she thanked him. And then he started walking away, and he turned around and he said, Zai gesund. Now you should be healthy. So then he walked away. The minute he walked away, she felt kaiches, and she was able to walk for the first time in her life. And this is a famous maisa, and she started crying and screaming, and she ran to her mother's room that this man came, this beautiful Jew with a long white beard came, and gave money, and said, Zai gesund, and she's walking. So the mother, they go crazy. The mother says, it's Elyonovi, it's Elyonovi, you know, it's a whole thing, it's Elyonovi. And that he brought us money, and Elyonovi gave you a bracha, and so on. So, eventually what happened was that the Vladislav Magid, after some more weeks, they were not in contact, you know, no cell phones or anything like that. So eventually the Vladislav Magid, came home, and when he was coming home, she ran out to greet him. The Vladislav Magid fainted. That's right, he passed out. he just passed out. And everybody came running, they brought him to, and they brought him to the house, and he was crying and hugging her. It was all maisa that, what happened? How was it? So they sat him down, and the Rebbetzin said, we had a maisa from Elyonovi Mamish. What was the maisa? So she sat over the maisa in the middle of the night, and knock on the window, and the whole thing, and he said, Zai gesund. And so, and then she was able to walk immediately. So then the Vladislav Magid, the Rebbe Avraham turned to the Rebbe Avraham's father, turned to the daughter, and said, tell me, what did he look like? And she described exactly how he looked and how he dressed and so on. And he understood that that was Rav David Lelever. And the tzidkus of Rav David Lelever that he didn't wait to the morning, that it was as soon as he got to town. And also, he could have sent a chassid, or anybody know, he had a shamoshim or a chassid to do it, and he went himself and he took care of it. And he realized that with two words, Zeigesund, they had been to every doctor. They had taken her, she was in Vienna, they went back to her to Germany, to all the biggest professors. And he says, in here, I don't, you know, I never went to any Hasidic rabbi because I don't go for any of these things. And he says, Zeigesund, like, Kalacha Yad, like, you know, just like, feel better, feel well. And then she's walking. So he decided that he must go to Lelev. First of all, he's a Yekke. And you understand that it's proper to say thank you. It's Derek Harris. First of all, this was the kindest thing that anybody ever did for him. And he decided, even though it was a schlep, after being home only 2 days from schlepping around the whole year, so the Vladislav Magid got his knapsack and he went out to Lelev to go give personal thanks to the Rebbe of David Lelever. And he came there and he said to Rebbe David Lelever the whole thing that after you left, he said, Zeigesund, my daughter's still, she's fine, and I'm forever grateful to you. Not only that, he said, I realize now that I really didn't know who you, that you people were such great tzaddikim. I never really looked into the whole matter. And if you're able if Hashem worked through you such a miracle, so that I want to stay here and to be your Talmud. I want to become one of your Hasidim, to be one of your followers. So Rav David Lelever said that, a person like yourself, an alte Yekke, you know, an old German Jew, and I'm already old, and I don't have the kaiches to deal with you right now, Sinyan. So, but if you want, which he did, but if you want to find out more about the Chassidim, go to my Rebbe, go to the Chayzer, the Seer of Lublin, and he immediately went. He went to the Chayzer. The meeting that he had, and that's how he first came to the Chayzer. This is already when he was an older man. The meeting that he had with the Chayzer was also very, very interesting. It's very much Nogaya. I'll just mention what happened there, because the Torah that was shared between them, because it's very much Nogaya to the time of year we're in right now, to these parishes of Bereishis Noach. He came to Lublin. He came to the Chayzer for Shabbos, Parishis Noach. This Shabbos, he came Parishis Noach. And he was given tremendous cover. He was known, he was famous as a big Talmud Chacham, as a great Magid. And after Shabbos, he spent Shabbos there. And after Shabbos, he came into the Chayzer. And let me just mention an interesting historical fact, the way it worked in those days, is that there were no chairs in any of the Rebbe's room. There were never chairs. Whoever came into the Rebbe, part of the Avodah was to stand there. There wasn't anybody, you didn't sit, only the Rebbe sat. And the person would stand there. Unless it was a very, very chashuv, a dignified rav, a tzaddik, so then it was like a very, very a big sign of a kibud to tell the shamas to bring in a chair. So the shamas, the rebbe, the chayzer told to bring in a chair for Vladislav Magid is here, and they spoke in Torah and they spoke in chassidus, and this is the record of the end of the conversation that that we have, which apparently the Vladislav Magid, when he came back and discussed this with his son, the Rebbe Rabunim, we have this. Rebbe Rabunim told us over to the Chassidim that this is the conversation that took place. The Chayze said to the Magid that it was yesterday. He said it was now. It wasn't Parshas Noach. It was Parshas Bereishis. Now it was Sunday of Parshas Bereishis. But yesterday he says it was Shabbos Bereishis. It was Shabbos Bereishis, and we read the Haftarah. and he explained some things in the Haftarah according to the teachings of Chassidus as he understood them and explained them, and he said that I would like you, Vladislav Magid, could you tell me something from the? I would like to hear something from you on the Haftarah. I explained the Haftarah of Derech Chassidus. I would like to hear you tell me something on Derech Hadrush. In other words, how would you understand the Haftarah in your way that you're comfortable with? I want to hear from you, which is also a sign of tremendous kavod. He was mechabed him to say Torah. So this is the Torah that the Vladislav Magid said that made a tremendous roshim on the Chayzer from Lublin, which later on, when the Rebbe Rabunim would come, he remembered that your father was the one who I enjoyed, gave me so much pleasure. It says there in the pasuk in the Haftarah that we just read this last Shabbos. It says, "Hoitzi am iver ve'inayim yesh." Take out the blind nation who has eyes, the charoshim vaznayim lomo, and the deaf people who have ears. In other words, the Jewish people are called blind people with eyes and deaf people with ears. So the Magid asked, the Vladislava asked, L'chaira, it doesn't make sense. If the person is blind, what's the difference if he has eyes or he doesn't have eyes? Take out the blind people who have eyes. And if deaf, so take out deaf people who have ears. What's the tachlis? What's the difference? They can't hear. What's the difference if they have ears or they have eyes? They're blind and they're deaf. So he said a mashal. You know, the Magidim used a lot of mashalim. So the Rebbe Budim's father said the following mashal. He said one time there was a great doctor who was known. He was a great eye doctor, and he came to a certain city. And when this became known, all of the men, women, and children, they all came running with all kinds of people who had problems with their eyes and so difficulties. They came to the doctor, and he was unbelievably successful in helping people with their eyes. And amongst those who came, there was a father who came with a little boy. The little boy was blind in both eyes from birth. And he brought it to the doctor, and the doctor takes one look at the child. He doesn't have to make any thorough study. He takes one look at the child and he says, what are you bringing me? Your son is, there's not an eye problem. He doesn't have an ailment. He says, unfortunately, he's blind from birth. So what do you think I can do? I'm God. I'm not God. I can't help. Your son is blind from birth. I can't help. So he told him, go, you know, good help. Hashem should know. God should help you. So the Vladislav Magid said, this is what the Navi Yeshayahu was saying. The Nimshal is that the Umos Ha'olam, the nations of the world, the non-Jewish world, who never stood on Har Sinai and never ever experienced the revelation of Har Sinai, so they are Nabuch blind from birth. They don't have the ability to see. They're blind from birth. And therefore, the Navi is saying, Yeshayahu Navi is saying, therefore, I'm not speaking, I'm not addressing those who are blind from birth, who don't have the ability to see. However, Atam B'nai Yisrael, the Vladislav Magid, is a beautiful, beautiful Moshe Limshul, but the Jewish people, that you saw, that you have the ability to see. You were by Har Sinai, your mama saw the thunder, the lightning, and you saw Moshe Rabbeinu, and you heard Anoichi Hashem Elokecha, you have eyes and you have ears. It's just that there's something wrong with them. But you have eyes and you have ears. So he says that the Navi comes to them complaining that you have eyes but you don't see, and you have ears but you don't hear. That there has to be, that there could be a Rafu and there could be a Yeshua because there's something that's blocking the eyesight. There's something that's blocking your hearing. Therefore the Navi was sent to Bnei Yisrael to help them to begin to see and to begin to hear. This is the marshal that the Vladislav Magid said to the Chayzer from Lublin, and the Chayzer from Lublin was so thrilled that he was mechabed him with some schnapps, and he gave him 6 rubles. It's actually that, we have that, it's actually recorded. He gave him 6 rubles, which for the Vada Slava Magid, I already told you, he had 3 from all year. So the Rebbe took from the money that he had on the table, and he gave the Vada Slava Magid, 6 rubles, and that is how, that's basically how the first exposure of the Rebbe Abunim's father to Hasidus. So it was a very positive one. Then another maaseh from the father. Before we go then more into the childhood of the Rebbe Abunim, but there's another interesting maaseh from the father. And again, I'm telling you these maaseh because A, they're very interesting, and B, because we have more of an understanding of who the Rebbe Abunim was when we see the kind of family that he came from. But there's another interesting maaseh with Rebbe Tzvi Hirsch, the father, the Vada Slava Magid. As I told you, that he used to go from place to place. Warsaw was one of the largest, even in those days, it was becoming one of the largest centers of Yiddishkeit, although it was not yet really a Hasidish town. Later on it became Warsaw by World War II was probably 98% Hasidim. Of the religious Jews, it was almost completely Hasidish. But in those days it wasn't yet completely, and he stayed, the Vada Slava Magid was staying in the mansion of a certain Gevir, Reb Zalman Posner, who was also a tremendous Talmud Chacham and a very rich man who had a beautiful house, and he was a misnagid. He was a strong misnagid. This Reb Zalman Posner, and at that time, the Rebbe Abunim, Reb Tzvi Hirsch's son, the Rebbe Abunim was working for the famous Tzadekas Temeril, which we're going to talk a lot more about. This Temeril who single-handedly supported many of the tzaddikim and many of the chatzeres, the Hasidic courts in Poland, this Tzadekas Temeril. So Rebbe Abunim was working for Temeril. He was actually involved in the business end of the lumber business. He was taking care of, she had a huge business in Poland, and the Rebbe Abunim was a manager that worked for Temeril, and oftentimes he was traveling with merchandise, and then he would sell and buy. He was a big merchant. So it seemed that it worked out that just at that time that his father was in Warsaw, they hadn't seen each other in quite a while, just at that time that his father, the Magid, was in Warsaw, so the Rebbe Abunim, it worked out that he was bringing a transport by the river over there, and that he was going to be able to come to visit, come into Warsaw to visit his father. And he sent a shliach, he sent a messenger, he was busy getting whatever the stuff, he sent a messenger to his father, to Reb Zalman. He knew that he was staying by Reb Zalman Poznan when everyone went to Warsaw. He said, go to Reb Zalman Poznan and tell my father that I'll be there, that I'll be there soon. Which teaches you, by the way, that I learned this also once, I told this to you once here in Shul, that I had this idea when I was in Eretz Yisrael in yeshiva to surprise my parents. So I mentioned this to you, that I was going to come back and surprise them. So I told them I'm coming back a certain day, which was like 2 weeks or a week later. And I was going to surprise them. It wasn't a good thing. My father was very, very happy, but he didn't go for that whole thing. And he was very, he was very shaken up, and he didn't like that whole way of doing it. So the Rebbe Abunim sent a shliach, right? When you have a father that's getting on in years, those are not surprises it's like, you know, for kids, like it's a neat thing, but for an older person, it might not be so neat. So the Rebbe Abunim sent the shliach, tell my father that I'm coming. So he's there in the house of the Reb Zalman Posner, they're talking and learning, and every 2 minutes, the Vada Slava Magid is running to the window to see, and he's clapping his hands, he's all excited. Abunimul is coming, you know, my son, and he's so excited, and the Reb Zalman Posner says, who knows what kind of a tzaddik, a kaddish, his son is, that the Vada Slava Magid is so excited. And then when the Rebbe Abunim was coming, the old man, the Vada Slava Magid, gets up and starts climbing out the window. He didn't even go to he got so excited, he starts going out the window. And the Rebbe Abunim runs there and helps him, and they start hugging and kissing. And the Reb Zalman Posner, this misnagid, so he looks over there, and he knew by that time the Rebbe Abunim was known as a Chassid Jiyid. So he goes over there, and he sees that this is the son of the Vada Slava Magid. He was wasn't even wearing a suit, not a German, he was wearing working clothing. He was just schlepping, and he was involved with this whole thing. And he came wearing like a peasant's clothing, and And when he saw this, Reb Zalman Posner, this rich misnagid, saw this, so he said, he says, Vodoslava Magid, he calls out. He says, for such a son, you get so excited that you're going to jump from the window for a peasant of a son? As he says, straight to the point. That for such a son, you're almost going to kill yourself to jump out the window. So he said, so the Vodoslava Magid was holding your bunim, and he said that this one, he says, with this peasant, he says, he says, this peasant of my son is going to pull me out of the seven departments of Gehenna. I'm depending upon him to pull me out of Gehenna. This peasant of a child that you said that I have. So the relationship, I thought it's a very touching story. The relationship between them is obviously very, very warm and very deep and very loving. And the Derech Eretz that the father had for the son. Remember, the father was one of the Gedolei Hador, was one of the leaders of the generation. The Rebbe Bunim at that time was probably in his early 20s. And, it's tremendous Derech Eretz. It's tremendous Derech Eretz to show for a child, that age. Now, as far as the Rebbe Bunim's childhood, so there are a number of stories. Again, from the father's home, we have some beautiful stories that I'll share with you. And again, all of these stories you'll see in terms of when we learn the Rebbe's Torah, a few weeks from now, we start to learn the Torah of the Rebbe, and you'll see how the upbringing had a reishim upon him and how he was influenced by that. And there definitely is an element of Drush in his teachings as well, which we're going to focus on later on. So one time, it was a very, very bitter winter night, and there was some guests that came to his father's house, to their house, the Vodos of the Magid, to warm up. And the Rebbetzin was getting the supper ready. And the father, the Vodos of the Magid, called over his son, who was only 3 years old at the time. Rabunim was 3 years old. And he said, Bunimul, he says, you're an Eloi. He was known as a genius as a child. He was a big genius. So he said, you're an Eloi. So I want you to be Mechadish, to come up with a Chiddish, a new concept in the sugya, in the subject of Hachnas Zorchim. Something new in the subject of of welcoming guests, in that Inyan. Something new, a Chiddush. So he was 3 years old, so Rabunim said, let me go and think about this. I have to go to my room and think about it. To the room and think about it. So to look into the sugya. After a few minutes, so Bunim came out, and he asked the guests to come into the room. And he showed them, he says, this is my chiddush. And he showed them that he went into the room and he made beds with fresh linen. He prepared the beds for these wayfarers. As a little boy, he was 3 years old, he made the beds and he said, this is my chiddush. So the Vodoslav Magid said, nu, what do you say of my genius, my bunimul and his chiddush, in Hachnas Zorachim? Do you like it? Do you like this chiddush? What was the chiddush? So the Vodoslav Magid said, no, Bunim will explain your Chiddush. So 3 years old, so the Rebbe Bunim said that it's important for a guest who's coming. He says that the Rebbetzin, my mother, was going to serve them the meal, but how could somebody really, these people are so tired from schlepping for so long, how could they really enjoy the meal if they don't yet know what it's going to be like what kind of arrangements there are for sleeping, whether it's going to be nice and comfortable and warm, how could they really, really enjoy their meal? So this is my Chiddush in the sugya of Hachnas Zorachim, to show the guest where they're going to be sleeping, where they're going to be staying, which, by the way, there is such a concept in Halacha as well, to show the guests that they should feel that they'll be able to eat, and then it's going to be good, it's going to be comfortable. That, you know, Bechlal, just Agav Urcha, without going into the Halachas, which we had last year, we had some Shiur on Tuesday night with the Indian of Hachnas Zorachim, but in general, it's very important to be sensitive to that when they're orachim. That even though you've been saving up all kinds of tires and stories and things, that you have to try to gauge the where your orachim are holding, especially if they're coming from out of town or from Eretz Yisrael or stam from a day's work, they might be exhausted, right? So never push it. But for a 3 year old child to have such a chiddush, it was something special. There's another story that we have. And this actually was an extremely, extremely important event in the Rebbe Bunim's life, and you'll see that he told once when he was older, when he was already a Rebbe. And, it's at once painful, but then at the same time, it brought about a change in the Rebbe Bunim for the better. The Maisa was that he said the Rebbe Bunim said that when he was young, he was learning in a cheder in Wadislaw there in Poland, and he said that he didn't have much zitzfleisch at the time. You know, as a child, he didn't sit, he wasn't concentrating much, and he said I wasn't able to learn the way the Malamed wanted. So his ragis alike kederach Malamed, as was the way of the Malamdim, he became angry. So, you know, if you speak to Jews that some, you know, like now, if a teacher looks at you the wrong way, you could already sue the teacher or something, you know. But forget, they'll never get another job the rest of their life. In those days, my father had in his hometown that there was a rabbi that killed a boy. The boy actually died. He went home, he banged him over the head so much, he went home that night, he never woke up the next morning. My father's town, he remembers the mice. It was what was going on in the town at that time. And they didn't even turn him in or anything. I don't know. My father said that he went to another town, but probably ended up being in a different cheder. Who knows? But that was Kedarkim. I mean, Kedarkim. Unfortunately, some of the rebbes were some of the poorest, and poverty can sometimes bring to bitterness and so on. So he said he became angry. And the docha I see, and he started pushing me, and he was he rejected me, and he said because God. The Rebbe Bunim said he started yelling, and he said, "Leich lechaladaka, get out of here." He says, "You're never going to be a lamdan," and he says, "Nothing's going to ever come from you. Nothing's going to ever come. We could get that rabbi, huh? Nothing's going to ever come from you. You're nothing." Someone just told me. I didn't know this. It was a friend of mine told me. You know, there was a famous actor, Zira Mostel. Right, the Jewish actor. His parents, I understand, were from people, Shemim Mitzvahs. That's what I was told. I think they lived in Forest Hills or something, but they were Shemim Mitzvahs. Yeah? So someone told me that the father didn't even speak English. Like a real, he barely spoke English. And that the father had told him when he took an interest in going into the theater and this, the father told him that you're going to be a Gornish and you're going to be a Gornish. So he called himself Zero. That's what he called himself. Gornish. He says, you're Gornish. He called himself Zero. That's where the name came from. Right? You know, but the father was talking right, though. I mean, it was good. So, but in this case, the Rebbe was not right. But he told him you're not going to be anything. So he was humiliated, and the Rebbe Bunim told this over when he was older. He said that he ran out of the cheder, and he said he was totally brokenhearted and humiliated, and he went into the forest, and he said he was crying for a long time. Until he said he was too embarrassed to go home. He didn't want his mother to see that he was thrown out of cheder, and he said he went into the Bis Medrash. There was no where do you go? So he went into the Bis Medrash, and he said in the Bis Medrash in those days. Now this is also important to understand how it was in Poland. You didn't have yeshivas really in Poland. You didn't have yeshivas. You had shtiblach, and in the shtiblach, in every town there was shtiblach. There were batei midrashim, and Jews learned in the shtiblach. You really have like, you know, Chachmi Lublin later on. That was unique to have in Poland, a yeshiva like that with a dormitory and the whole business. You didn't have in Poland. In Poland there were batei midrashim and different Talmid Chachamim would go there, and boys would come in and learn with different, you know, when they were older they would sit and learn with different Talmid Chachamim in the shtiebel and the Bis Medrash. That's how it was. You didn't have officially yeshivas with Rosh Yeshivas. There was shtiebelach with Talmid Chachamim that were learning with people. So the Rebbe Bunim said that in that shtiebel, in the Bis Medrash, in Wadislaw, there was a Yid, there was a Jew, a tremendous lamdan. He says, Charif. He says, awesomely sharp. Muflug, v'charif, gadol moed. And his name was Rebbe Abba. Rebbe Abba. So he said, the Rebbe Bunim said, that I went over to him, and I said, Rebbe Abba, Rebbe, can you, give me a Gemara to learn. In other words, he wanted to do it. He wanted to succeed. He wanted to prove himself. So he says, Rebbe, give me a Gemara to learn, to make a leinen, to prepare, and then test me on the Gemara. Could you do that? So Rabbi says, sure. And he gave him a sugi in Bava Kama, a very hard sugi. He gave him a Gemara in Bava Kama to prepare. And the Rebbe Bunim said that I went for a while on the side there but he says, since I was usually fooling around when I was little, I really, you know, I didn't have the tools for this sugi. So I went, I was trying. And I thought I had it, and he called me back to him to come for the to say over the Gemara, and I realized after like 30 seconds, I'm Amish, and I didn't know it. I didn't know it at all. I got it a little wrong. So like there's a friend of mine about Shuva who said that when he first looked at the Gemara,
you know, he was studying a lot of Hebrew, and he wanted to, now he was starting to learn Gemara, and he looked at the cover, and he was wondering, what does it mean, Tilmod Bibli? Now, forget about Talmud Bavli. He says, what does it mean, Tilmod Bibli? Right? So, you know how it feels like, if you don't get it, it feels bad. So he said that the Rebbe Abba, you know, Rebbe Abba sized him up in a second, that he doesn't have it all. He didn't prepare the Gemara well at all. And he said that, I cried. I started to cry. And I told Rebbe Abba what happened to me in Cheder. And that I can't go back, and I have to try again, I have to learn. And would you learn this Gemara with me? Can you help me? So he said that this Yid Rebbe Abba sat with him and told him the Gemara slowly. He said that for hours he sat with him and went through the Gemara with the Rashi, Tosfos, everything. And he said that Rebbe Abba started to ask me then, once I had, you know, because I didn't have the tools, but once I understood, so then he said, Rebbe Abba, I was asking Rebbe Abba questions, and he was asking me back and forth. And Rebbe Abba, he said, very soon realized that I was a charif, that I was a genius, and he was a genius of a kid. So he realized that, and the Rebbe Abba said, what kind of a Rebbe? What kind of a Malamed? You're wonderful. What kind of a Malamed threw you out? And you don't need to go to Cheder. You're staying with me here. You're staying with me here in Bis Medrash. And for all of his life, Rebbe never forgot this Rebbe Abba. We don't even know which Rebbe Abba, but he said, this Rebbe Abba was the one who brought me into learning, and brought my neshama back when I felt totally tzibrachin, till the point he learned with him, to the point where his father was able to send him to learn by some of the greatest scholars, not in Poland. He sent him back to Germany. You see, not staying over here, but the Rebbe Abba prepped him to the point that he was able to go back to learn by Rebbe Yirmiyah from Mattersdorf, which we'll talk about in a second, and by the famous Goyen, one of the most famous and illustrious Goyenim of all of Germany, was Reb Mordechai Benet. Even though there's some question, we'll talk about that probably next week, about how long, if at all, did he learn by Reb Mordechai Benet. There is some disagreement about whether he was actually in the yeshiva of Reb Mordechai Benet. But as far as Reb Yirmiyah from Mattersdorf, he spent quite a few years there. Let me tell you a little bit about this trip that he took to go to yeshiva. Why did he leave Poland? So, as I mentioned to you before, the way of learning by the Bochum in those days in Poland was not at all organized. It was totally hefker. You went to some shtiebel and then you pulled up like he did with Rebbe Abba, and you found a yid that was willing to learn with you, and then a couple of boys would gather around the Talmud Chacham, and I mean, they were unbelievable geniuses that came out of that system, but it wasn't at all mesuder. It wasn't organized. It wasn't anything that was established. Now, because the Vladislav Magi was a Yekke, he was a German Jew, he couldn't bear this at all. To him, this was totally intolerable to have such a way of learning. That like this, you know, shtiblach, between Minchamarev and a Kiddush, and he just couldn't, you know, it wasn't for him. So he decided that he wants his son to learn in a real yeshiva, in a regular yeshiva, and that he should also, he thought that his son was among the Polish Jews, was growing up uncultured, uncivilized, and wild. And it's back, and he has to send him to Germany. Then he should learn, A, he should learn in the yeshiva, and that B, he should learn how to be a mensch. He should learn how to act as a more cultured person. So, the Vladislav Magid sent him to learn by Rebbe Yirmiyah from Mattersdorf. Mattersdorf is actually Austria. Rebbe Yirmiyah, which is now famous because of Mattersdorf, the Chassam Seifer's family ended up there. But this Rebbe Yirmiyah was at that time one of the greatest Rosh Yeshivas. He had a huge yeshiva there in Mattersdorf, and he was a very old man, which the Vladislav Magid was a Talmud of. He himself learned by Rebbe Yirmiyah many, many years before when he was there, when he was in Austria. So, and him, the Vladislav Magid and the Rosh Yeshiva, Rebbe Yirmiyah, Mattersdorf, were Yedidim, were in touch, and were good friends, and therefore he sent him to go learn there. The Vladislav Magid, we know, learned there for 10 years. The Rebbe Abunim spent quite a few years there. It's not clear exactly, but it seems that between 6 and 9 or 10 years, he was learning in Germany. And what? We'll talk about that in a second. He was married when he was 26. He wasn't married, again, not in the typical Polish way. When they were married, the Bochum married when they were 18, 17. He was married when he was 26. That's why it sounds like there is a bit of a stretch of time. So he went to learn there from when he was approximately Bar Mitzvah, and he spent there a good period of time in Mattersdorf. He was already obviously fluent in German, because in his parents' home they spoke German, even though he was also fluent in Yiddish because he grew up in Poland. But the Mama Lashon was not Yiddish; it was German. He went to learn there in the yeshiva, and we're going to come back to that. And the way that influenced him also had a tremendous influence over him. And again, this would enable him to understand Jews that were not from his background, that were from a more Western, modern background. Ultimately, he would bring hundreds, if not thousands, of these Jews into the teachings, into the ways of Chassidus. Which gives us just enough time to start with the question of how did he get to Chassidus? How did that happen? What happened? Who did he go to? Now, again, he's brought up in this very strong German home. Even though he was in Poland, how did he come to Chassidus? So, we know that there were four teachers in Chassidus that the Rebbe Bunim had. Four rabbis, four rebbeim. The Chayzer from Lublin, the cousin Samagid, the Rebbe Moshe Leib Sassever, and the Yira Kaddish, the Holy Jew from Pshischa. These were his four teachers. However, the only one of them who he referred to as Adonainu, Moreinu v'Rabbeinu, my master and my teacher, who he considered to be his primary Rebbe, and he called him always Adonainu Moreinu v'Rabbeinu, was the Yidda Kaddish, the Holy Jew from Pshischa. He was the greatest disciple of the Yidda Kaddish, the greatest student of the Yidda Kaddish we spoke about last year. So how did he start? So it seems quite clear that he had already visited, he had seen the old tzaddikim, the Oyev Yisrael, the Abderov, and even the famous grandson of the Baal Shem Tov, the Degel Machne Ephraim, the Moshe Chaim Ephraim. He saw them in their later years, and from the time that he was a child, it's very clear, as I mentioned at the beginning tonight, from the time that he was a child, his whole teva was very, his nature was very drawn to Chassidim, and since he was in Poland, it was all around, and he had seen Svarim, and he had heard tzaddikim that came to visit and passed through the town. So he was very taken by Chassidus in the time that he was a little boy. It wasn't something that was new to him. As far as who was the one that actually brought him into the customs and into the path of Chassidus, it seems almost definite that was Rabbi Moshe Leib Sassever. Rabbi Moshe Leib Sassever, who was 20 years older, he was 20 years older than the Rebbe Bunim. Now, why, aside from how it works out geographically, historically, and where and how they met and so on, why was it that the Rebbe Moshe Leib Sassever was so effective in so to speak converting, even though it wasn't such a hard conversion, but in converting the Rabbunim into a chassid? They had a lot of similarities. Rebbe Moshe Leib Sassever was a huge lamdan, was also a genius, very sharp, also was known for an extremely, extremely great sense of humor, which we'll see later on. The Rebbe Bunim's Rebbe Bunim had a very unusual sense of humor. It was very funny. And the Rebbe Moshe Leib Sassever was a tremendous Baal Chesed, which we'll talk about also, that the Rebbe Bunim had this strong chush for giving and for helping people. And Be'ikr, the main reason that this worked out is because among all of the great students of the Mizritcha Magid, the Rebbe Moshe Leib Sassever had the responsibility of all the students more than the others to go and to bring back some of the talented young men of Poland, to bring them and to basically, you know, go fishing and bring them into Chassidus. And that he was an outreach worker for the tzaddikim, and there are many young people that he brought back just simple to do tshuva, who were off the derech altogether. But even more so, Rav Moshe Leib Sassever brought back some of the most famous of the tzaddikim, were actually caught by Rav Moshe Leib Sassever, brought over. He would bring them then to other tzaddikim, and he would stay with them and then send them off to other rabbis and so on. One of the victims of Rav Moshe Leib Sassever was the Rebbe Rabunim. It seems clear from some of the things that Rabunim said and Hakar Satov that he had for him, is that was actually the beginning of Rabbunim's change to actually beginning not just to be interested in to be fascinated, but to be begin to change and to go in the derech of Chassidus. However, it wasn't until much later that the Rebbe that Rabbunim actually changed his way of dressing, and as and we'll talk about that more. He also wore the clothing of his father. He was learning in yeshiva in Germany, and he came back with he came back in a German suit. He did not come back in Hasidic clothing. Those of you who might, in modern times, the only thing I think that could resemble that is the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And when the Lubavitcher Rebbe became Rebbe, so it wasn't so simple. Even though the Hasidim will make it sound like it was unanimous, that's absolutely not true. Many of the older Hasidim were extremely, extremely upset about the fact that we had this this dapper-looking young gentleman who wore a European suit and had studied who had studied in Germany and in Paris, and did not go over too well by the Rebbe's wedding in Warsaw. How he dressed, and he wore a white glove. It was he was dressed in a very European way, and even though now maybe in Lubavitch, so a lot of, you know, they see the fellows will dress more in suits than they will in the traditional clothing of the Hasidim, but when the Rebbe became Rebbe, the vast majority of the Hasidim, the old Hasidim, they were all very Hasidish, and his father-in-law, the Friedrich Rebbe, is in a war spodek, and they wore the Chassidish Levushim. This was in our days, I guess we could compare it to when the Rebbe Bunim first came among the Hasidim, and he was wearing European clothing, that caused quite a shock, and it followed him around for many, many years. That we'll see that the Tzaddikim from Galicia never let him forget that. The Tzaddikim from Galicia, because in Galicia it was really, really the Rebbe of Melech's territory, and Rapshitz, that was real strong Chassidus with the Levush, with everything, all the customs. So, he was always called, Der Deitschel. They called him the German. That was the nickname, the Deitschel. It was, used as a, the Chassidim never called him that, but it was a Shtach, and it had to do with the fact that, he always had his shoes were always shining, and he spoke German. And he would even say Torah in German, which was a no-no by the Hasidim, to say Torah in German. Even though he was traveling to Kuznets and he was traveling to Sasev and he went to Lublin, he always, in the early years before he became Rebbe, he went in the clothing and with the customs of the Jews of Germany. And as a result of that, he already from before he became Rebbe had quite a few misnagdim. There were already many of the Hasidim who were saying negative things about him, the fact that he seemed to be perfectly comfortable with it even though he never responded, as we know, to any of these things that were said about him, eventually he became Rebbe. Of course, he did change the Levush, and he did go in the typical clothing of the Tzaddikim of Poland, but that wasn't until many years later. For the rest of his life, those who had negative things to say about him would call him Der Deitschel, the German. And for him, it was always a source of pride. He didn't see that as being anything to be embarrassed of. It was a source of pride. And as we'll talk about next week, it enabled him to literally reach thousands and thousands of Jews who otherwise would never have gone near the classic Hasidic type that was in Poland. So Mitzvah, we'll continue with that next week.